Hey homies, this episode, while ultimately uplifting in my opinion, does contain conversations involving both existential dread and discussions about suicide. If that's not something you're trying to hear right now, please feel empowered to skip this one and we'll see you next week. Welcome to the Inner Hoe Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist hoe who lives in New York City, who is non-binary-ish and whose pronouns are they, them, she, and her.
And me, Rodeca, even though now I go by B, I haven't talked about this, but I decided when I moved, I was like, I'm going to go by a name that resonates with me, and B's kind of like been sticking, so... B-E-E, Rodeca B, sometimes Rebecca, apparently, who's an absurdist, we'll talk about that later, whose life is a series of coincidences that somehow landed her ear, and my pronouns are she, they, he sometimes, hey, you know.
Be the he. Yeah. That's cool.
You see how you're always quick with something, and that was good. I like that.
Cool. I appreciate the intro updates. All right, cool. Every episode of the Inner Hoe Uprising works like this. Myself and my lovely rotating co-hosts talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours. And occasionally we hit you with interviews with insightful folks or do deep dive episodes on a topic of our choice. This episode, we're getting all philosophical. We're talking about different philosophical schools of thought and how they impact our perceptions to sex, love, and dating. So how do we feel about fucking if life is ultimately meaningless? Or on the flip side, how do we date if life is inherently meaningful? I don't fucking know, but we're gonna find out in a bit. But first, where can we engage in the conversations?
If you would like to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag InnerHoeUprising or tweet us InnerHoeUprising without the G on Twitter. We're also on Instagram and Facebook at InnerHoeUprising.
All right. Let us get into our topic of the day. It is called Fuck It. And today we're getting all philosophical. I don't know where this is going, but I'm excited for the ride.
Okay. So I want to frame it in the beginning as, I decided to kind of go a little different. I feel like with like fuck it and like when we do topics, we talk about the topic and I might like throw a personal anecdote in there in the beginning, but I wanted to frame this as like the whole thing being like personal and kind of using these definitions to punch up exactly what I'm saying. But because it feels like kind of like a journey for me and I've talked about being philosophical or like talk about existentialism a little bit here and there, but I never really talked about like where that came from or why I started talking about it. And for a long time, I would be afraid to talk about like death and dying or like meaning and all that type of stuff in any aspect and only with like one person in my life. And I don't even talk to that person anymore. So I felt like as a freeing thing for myself, as well as just like for people to talk about things that we're always afraid to talk about, and that topic being, even now I'm saying that topic to kind of be light about it, but like death and like meaning and intrinsicness or like combating religion or things like that, where for a long time I would be really afraid to have these conversations. I felt like when we talked about like what do we want to talk about in the last season, I was like, fuck it, let's do it, because this is something I think about every day, but I don't talk about it because I'm afraid of like creating this existential dread in people, when in reality I don't even think about the fact that like people probably already have existential dread in their own
every single night. I wake up, it's not every night, but it's like four times out of the week I'll wake up and be like, you're gonna die one day, and I'll just go back to sleep.
Four
out of seven times of the week in my life, that is,
bro, in my mind. That's like, that's,
and when I'm unconscious, like, too, it's like waking me up.
It's just like, yo, I'm chilling. Well, I'm supposed to be chilling. Like, for me,
I'm literally chilling.
I have moments where I don't want to go to sleep because I'm like, yo, I'm supposed to just trust that a nigga's gonna wake up again. Like, that's crazy. You know what I mean? So, like, it's things that like I think about constantly, but I don't want to talk to anyone about because I'm like trying to avoid this pain in people and blah 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 blah. But like, I think this is like a moment of liberation where I'm like, I'm going to talk about it because it's a part of being me and it's a part of like my anxiety and where my anxiety like stemmed from, and where like I'm talking about in therapy and I'm like, hey, I can't go on the train because I'm scared that something's going to happen. And it's like very real for me. Like I will stay home if it means that like I could be safe here. But sometimes when I'm home, I'm like, these ceilings, who inspected these? When's the last, you know? So if I'm thinking yeah. those things, I just want to like have a conversation about it, especially because, mm-hmm. you know, another thing that I've struggled with was a loss of religion because mm-hmm. I grew up in the church.
Right.
And like not having that. And I want to say from the beginning, like, this is nothing against people who are religious. I'm just not religious. So this is my standpoint. So for me, it was like not having that safety net. I didn't want the word safety net to be like, well, you know, God's not a safety net for everyone. But for me, like I view it as like, I don't have that. Something's going to happen after. I just have fear, you know? That's kind of where me even looking at philosophy and arriving at these three different things that like had an impact for a long time for me in terms of like research and like what I was reading and how I was framing the way that I looked at life. It came from starting with like the lack of religion and just like things happening to me that made me more anxious and more questioning about life in general. But I did want to start with a question, Sam. You said you didn't know. You said you didn't know anything, you know, about what we're going to talk about. But what what personal, religious, spiritual, philosophical views do you have as a person?
I think philosophical views, I don't have any because I've never deeply engaged with philosophy enough to declare that I have like pertain to a certain like school of thought or whatever. So I'll just say that.
Yeah.
Religious, I don't practice any religion, so none there. But spirituality wise, I believe in like ancestral veneration, and I toggle back and forth between like, I guess what that means for me, like the afterlife, like if there is one and stuff like that. I think I can consider myself agnostic. Like, I don't know.
But yeah.
Like, it'd be nice. It'd be nice kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just like for my own personal, like you exist, you know, like in your brain, you're doing like you drink water because you want to keep existing. You're eating food because you want to keep existing. So obviously, like you don't want there to not be an afterlife because you want your soul and your consciousness to continue to exist.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, that'd be nice. But in terms of like the ancestral veneration and stuff like that, like I do that because I believe somewhere, whether it be like literal stardust, which is actually true, like we know that.
Yeah.
Or if there is like a special place that like my ancestors and everyone who is come before me, like whether like spiritually or like blood wise, still exist in some way in some like realm.
Yeah.
So like when I put out offerings to like my altar and stuff like that, like that's why I'm doing it. So something in me believes that something exists somewhere after death, but I don't know if it's just like, oh, my mom was like walking around like, yo, the fuck is up? Like I don't know. So yeah, but that's how I describe myself.
I think you and I are similar in that front where we've had conversations, like smaller conversations like that. But definitely, I would consider myself, if I had to put, other than philosophically, I would say agnostic, because I've tried, like I started off in the Baptist church and like I stopped identifying as Christian when I was like 10, maybe even earlier than that. But like I stopped going regularly when I was like 11. But then for me, it was agnostic because I acknowledge the fact that I don't know, but in acknowledging that I don't know, I recognize it. Like I literally don't know anything. So for me to have a stamp and be like, it's definitely not anything seems kind of ridiculous. It seems like, I don't know how scientists have figured out how we got here to a certain extent. But then even then it's like, that's always evolving. Everything's always evolving. So I feel like agnostic kind of puts the stamp of like, I don't believe in any one thing, but like, surprise me, because it'd be really nice if there was something else, you know? But then for me, I found that I was personally struggling with the idea that if I don't know and there's no intrinsic meaning that I can put a stamp on, then I felt like I was suffering, right? And it really came to a head for me when I got into my car accident. I got to my car accident like, I don't know, like 2017. It's funny to think that I don't remember the date off the top of my head, but that seems around about right. And it was really like, I always think about myself as pre-car accident and post-car accident, because it was just like, I remember coming to, I don't know if I ever talked about the car accident on this show either. That's interesting. But I had gotten into a pretty bad car accident with a semi truck, well, an actual truck, like a 24 wheeler, with my friend on a way to a party. And she ended up in the hospital. She ended up having to get surgery. And like, I would say I didn't have any like harm. Like I wasn't physically harmed other than like the actual ache of a car accident, which was horrible. But like mentally, it broke me like to my core, where I was just like, I remember coming to and just thinking like I should be dead. And I kept saying it over and over again. And it was just like this moment where I think I recognized how much I was kind of floating and not really thinking about mortality or thinking about a lot of things in a real sense. And then it was all I could think about. And I had had a time where for 3 months straight, I wasn't sleeping. I was asking my mother to pray for me, and me and my mother don't even have like a relationship like that. And I was like, pray for me, like laying on her lap, crying. Anytime anybody would hit me up at 5 a.m., I was already up because there was no way that I was going to sleep. And I just didn't tell anybody. I didn't tell anybody. I was on the train. Like, I remember one time I screamed out loud on the train because I was just like, I couldn't stand the sound of like my brain going me like, oh my God, what are we doing? What are we doing? What are you doing? And I just like had to silence it. Like, it was just nonstop terror. And I didn't want to talk to anybody because I didn't want to create that same existential dread that was like keeping me up at night in someone else. So I just like suffered. And the person I was dating at the time was very religious. So like when I tried to talk to him initially, it was like a dead end. So I just felt very alone. So I ended up like researching things. This is actually how I ended up, one, getting the Alcor thing where like I want to do cryopreservation, but also how I started looking at philosophy in general, because I feel like I hated philosophy in college. And I was just like, you know, I never really thought, I always thought it was just like a whole bunch of old white guys just talking. And it just didn't resonate with me in any type of way. But I was kind of just like Googling things like, how do you keep going when you like, you don't have religion, but you're like scared of life, like not having meaning. So it's like not even necessarily death, but like the whole thing just felt like meaningless to me. So that's how I had initially found out about nihilism. So throughout my personal like talking about it, I'm also going to quote from an article titled "The Difference Between Existentialism, Nihilism, and Absurdism" by Daniel Messler and Wikipedia, because there's so much about each philosophy that I'm going to talk about that to try and like flesh out each in literally any given amount of time would feel impossible. So I feel like just having the definitions of what everything is makes it a lot easier from the jump, because usually I do it later, but we're gonna do it in the beginning, y'all. So so to start, it started off with me finding out what nihilism was. So nihilism is the belief that there is no intrinsic meaning in the universe, but that it's pointless to try and construct our own as a substitute. So it's just like, there's no meaning trying to do anything about that. It just doesn't even matter. Nihilism is a philosophy or a family of views within philosophy that rejects generally accepted or fundamental aspects of human existence, such as objective truth, knowledge, morality, values, or meaning. The term was popularized by Ivan Turgenev, who made use of it in his novel Fathers and Sons. There has been different nihilist positions, including human values are baseless, that life is meaningless, that knowledge is impossible, or that some set of entities do not exist or are meaningless or pointless. Scholars of nihilism may regard it as merely a label that has been applied to various separate philosophies or as a distinct historical concept arising out of nominalism, skepticism, and philosophical pessimism, as well as possibly out of Christianity itself. Contemporary understanding of the idea stems largely from the, and this is a French, not French, this is a German last name. I don't know. Wait, actually, I was going to say, can you help me pronounce this?
I can.
Okay. Nietzsche.
Can you?
Do you Nietzsche? Yeah, Nietzsche. I'm going to go with Nietzsche. I think it's Nietzsche.
It's pronounced Nietzsche.
Nietzsche?
I believe. Yeah.
Oh, I was close. Nietzsche.
People be like Nietzsche.
Okay. Nietzsche. And
yeah.
Okay, cool.
I feel Price. Like the English way to say it would be Nietzsche, but like the German way is like Nietzsche.
Nietzsche. Okay. Thank you. See? Resident specialist on hand, not specialist, but someone's gonna be like, that's not even right. I'm just kidding. Crisis of nihilism, from which derives the two central concepts, the destruction of higher values and the opposition to the affirmation of life. The term is sometimes used to explain the general mood of despair at perceived pointlessness of existence or the arbitrariness of human principles and social institutions. So I started off there. As you can see, it's just kind of like dismal. It's just like, there's nothing. Don't try. Don't do it. Go ahead. Sure.
I have a question about that, or maybe just like a thought experimenty kind of question. Because when I think of, okay, I was like, I know something about these. Like, obviously, like, I'm a human being who's like read and things and shit like that. So when I think about nihilism, I think of like the deepest, darkest, like 8chan boards where people are like, one, encouraging people to kill themselves, or like encouraging people to like do like school shootings and shit like that. Like, those are people who I associate with nihilism, and I know that they do ascribe to nihilistic thought. But like, even if I like empathetically thinking, because I do believe that like life has inherent value and all that kind of shit. But even like empathizing with someone who thinks that life has no inherent value, I don't then jump to the logical conclusion that I should kill other people or myself. So I'm like, is nihilism inherently like just being debased kind of thing? Like, do you have to be a serial killer?
So that's the thing. Nihilist? And that's funny. I'm glad that you know that association, because I do talk about it a little bit later, but I'd love to talk about it now. It is something that is often associated with the two things you said, either kill yourself or kill other people, right? But I think it's just used as an excuse to go there, kind of, because you could also take that and say, well, okay, I could just not associate with anybody and just kind of chill.
Knowing I can plant a tree because I have fun doing it or something.
Exactly. So actually, one of the main reasons why I wanted to talk about it on the show is because I had been around somebody who was always going there, and it made me so intensely depressed, and it kind of reaffirmed the hopelessness that I felt about it. And I was just like, I feel like there has to be like another way to look at it. Like, it can't be just that. And I like, my point at the end is literally like, it's not just that. Like, if you're going there, you're using it because you want to use this doctrine for that, because it feels like something. I was actually watching South Park earlier, and I thought it was funny because like five times I saw like somebody was talking about nihilism today, and I was like, of course, the day that I'm talking about it, like, it's going to keep coming up. And it's an episode where one of the fathers, I don't even remember his name, Kyle's dad, he is like being a troll online, and he's like, and the guy's like, so he's like, it's funny, it's nihilism. He was like, so it's an excuse to just be an asshole. And he was like, yeah, you see, so it doesn't have to be that. And that's like weird. It's not weird. It's just something that people use as an excuse to devalue life, when in actuality, it's just saying like, while life might have some meaning, there's no one way or the other. And actually using that to create a meaning in something that you do goes against the principle in and of itself. So you're not even actually making any sense, because it's really just like, it stops there. It's not about like, oh, well,
you, it's not a prescription. Like, here's a
it stops there.
Step-by-step guide.
Exactly.
Makes sense.
But like, for me, when I was going through my research, it naturally gravitated, because I just didn't, because the person that I was around that was always using nihilism as like an excuse to kind of just be like a dick, or like say negative things about people, it just didn't resonate with me that way. So I was like, is it just like, am I not a true nihilist? Like, what is the right like way to be? So that kind of naturally gravitated to me finding about existentialism, which a lot of people tout as like optimistic nihilism. Existentialism is the belief that through a combination of awareness, free will, and personal responsibility, one can construct their own meaning within a world that intrinsically has none of its own. Existentialism is a form of philosophical inquiry that explores the problem of human existence and centers on the subjective experience of thinking, feeling, and acting. Existentialist thinkers frequently explore issues related to the meaning, purpose, and value of human existence. In the view of an existentialist, the individual starting point has been called the existential angst, a sense of dread, disorientation, confusion, or anxiety in the face of an apparently meaningless or absurd world. So that kind of took me over to existentialism. I like identified as that, because I was like, okay, at least I could take my own personal responsibility, and whatever I do moving forward is what I create, and there's value in that, or there's meaning in that. And like, it made me feel like I had a sense of direction, because I was like, well, and that kind of fueled it around that time, me going out by myself for the first time and me kind of just doing things where I was like, I'm here. There's like, I'm going to be here. I can create my own purpose. And it doesn't mean that I like have to hurt people. It doesn't mean that I have to be flippant about people, other people's values. It's just like my values are just as important. And actually around the time it was just like, I was so defiant about a lot of things. Cause I was just like, well, this is my existence and it is what it is. And it was very emboldening for me. So I think it was like a positive step in the directions. I hate that it's considered like the optimistic thing. I think it's more actionable than anything because it doesn't necessarily, like, you could also take that and use that as an excuse to say, well, this is my personal opinion and this exactly. So yeah. Everything can just be used as like a, for lack of a better word, a bullet in one direction or the other. Like, it's just the people will use it because it feels like the easiest way to explain away cruelty, but it doesn't have to be that way. But then that recently, I actually didn't know about absurdism until this year. Led me to that because I felt like existentialism. Well, no, I didn't actually feel that way. I'll talk about that later. But it was just like I just ended up stumbling into absurdism and I thought it was very interesting. So I kind of adapted that as well. And that's the belief that a search for meaning is inherently in conflict with the actual lack of meaning, but that one should accept this and simultaneously rebel against it by embracing what life has to offer. Absurdism is a philosophical theory that existence in general is absurd. This implies that the world lacks meaning or a higher purpose and is not fully intelligible by reason. The term absurd also has more specific sense in the context of absurdism. It refers to a conflict or discrepancy between two things that are several disagreements about their exact nature. These disagreements have various consequences for whether absurdism is true and for the arguments cited in favor and against it. Popular accounts categorize the conflict as a collision between rational men and an irrational universe, between intention and outcome, or between subjective assessment or objective worth. The term absurdism is most closely associated with the philosophy of Albert Camus. He's French.
Camus.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I have thoughts about him later.
Oh, you do? Okay, cool. Of Albert Camus, its basic outlook is inspired by existentialist philosophy. However, existentialism includes theoretical commitments and often takes a more optimistic attitude towards the possibility of finding or creating meaning in one's life. Absurdism and nihilism share the belief that life is meaningless, but absurdists do not treat this as an isolated fact and are instead interested in the conflict between the human desire for meaning and the world's lack thereof. Being confronted with this conflict may trigger an existential crisis, which is like my username for like everything, because it's just so it might trigger an existential crisis in which unpleasant experiences like anxiety or depression may push the affected to find a response for dealing with the conflict. Recognizing the absence of objective meaning, however, does not preclude to the conscious thinker from finding subjective meaning in arbitrary places. But those are the three definitions. I wanted to pause here because it's a lot of information and kind of ask you, have you heard of these philosophies now that there's a little more fleshed out, and do they stir any type of feeling in you where you're like, this is interesting, this is something that I could like read into or anything like that?
So I have heard of nihilism. Obviously, we had a little chit chat about that. And I have also heard of existentialism, and then also just like existentialist dread. Like, that's something that I think that even whether or not you ascribe to it, like everybody experiences.
Yeah.
Maybe not everybody, but a large portion of people. I never heard of absurdism, and I don't exactly know how it ties in, but by way of something that Alfred Camus made, really impacted kind of the way that I would like to continue navigating about the world. You know, like I feel like every very shit show things that happen, I have to like reevaluate, like, okay, how am I going to go forward with this? Like 9/11, I was like, okay, I'm just like not that I don't care about internal conflict, but I was very much like a really anxious kid where I was like, everything that could ever happen, you're all going to fucking die. Like I took Y2K very seriously to the point where I was running around my house like, we're all gonna die.
Yeah. I was just talking about 666, like people weren't talking about that. It's like, why was I freaking out so much the entire 24 hours? I freaked out at that too. Yeah.
I did freak out at that one too, but that was more of like because it added religion to it.
Yeah.
But after 9/11, I was like, girl, if we not dead yet, like the nukes are coming, like whatever. I was just like, I can't, because I have to compartmentalize. Like, mm-hmm. I can't worry about everything all the time. So, like, after my grandma died, I had a very similar experience to you after your car accident, where I was, like, constantly thinking about, like, my own death and just, yeah. like, the death of other people. And I was, like, commuting at that time, and I would be on the train, like, having similar situations as you. Because, like, you just think on
you're
the train.
You're just in, like, a little box. Yeah.
And that was, like, pre, like, Wi-Fi on your phone train day. So there was nothing to do. Like, you're either reading or you're thinking about some shit. And, like, I zone out very easily. So when I'm reading, I start thinking of shit. So, like, that was a really bad time. But then I, like, I don't know, I compartmentalize it. And now I just, like, sure, it wakes me up at 4 o'clock in the morning, but, like, I don't think about it every waking moment of my day. But like another like how do we go forward kind of moment thing was just like seeing how people reacted to the pandemic and then also seeing how the COVID-19 pandemic and seeing just I say it on the show a lot, the fascistic downfall of our society. Like, it's something that I actually believe is happening. It like we're like taking away people's rights. Like, one of the most famous rappers of all time is just like spewing anti-Semitic shit. Like, this is like we're like mirroring Nazi Germany. So maybe it was like a couple of months ago. I've never read Camus. I've never read him. I want to read The Plague, but I haven't read it yet. But I saw a YouTube video about The Plague, which is how niggas learn things nowadays. And it was by this creator. There you go. Information is information. But yeah. I don't remember the creator's name. I just know that he's Cuban and gay and kind of looks like my boyfriend. And that's it. But I'll put his YouTube link in the show notes. But basically, he made a video about Camus and The Plague and the fact that the book was like it was an allegory for like a march towards fascism. And spoilers if you want to read the book. So like skip forward 5 minutes or something like that. But the story centers around a doctor who like knows that he can't stop the plague because it's so overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Like once you're in it, like once the, like, I feel like once the trajectory is set or like a slope is like flipped, like you kind of just like descent into madness for a little bit until like we can circle back out of that madness. Yeah. And one person cannot stop the descent into madness. Like one of us is not going to like stop climate change from happening and shit like that. But the doctor, like he keeps treating people. And there's like this one scene where he like interacts with, I think, like a grave digger, and the digger keeps digging the grave. And it's like, you know that you're going to like keep doing this, and you know you're going to keep treating people, but you do it because that's like they've accepted that as their life's work.
Yeah.
So like that and like reading Parable of the Sower at the beginning of the pandemic was like, I do believe that these bad changes are going to happen, but I also believe that my life's work is to keep pushing against it, even if like.
Yeah.
It's like, even if it's like, duh, I'm going to die before these things are like accomplished, if they ever are accomplished. But my life's work is to like make it a little bit better for the person that I'm interacting with, or the person who also believes like, oh, we shouldn't be subjected to this type of shit. So
that's good.
I don't know.
He keeps.
Is that absurdism?
I was just about to say he kind of keeps the same theme. And the basics of absurdism is actually the myth of Sisyphus. That's a book that he wrote. And it's kind of like, I'll talk a little bit about it, but it's kind of the same thing, because Sisyphus is cursed by Zeus to keep pushing the same rock over and over again. And like, that's the same allegory of like, it's going to be the same thing and it may not result in anything, but it's not to stop. It's like to continue to do it and find joy in that and realize that there's like the effort means something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that. Sisyphus is like doing your laundry every day.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about Sisyphus.
It's just always dirty. Like, I have a washing machine now and I'm like, wow, it's just going to get dirty again, huh? I'm just going to do it again.
Did you see Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Yes.
Okay, so you, another fucking spoiler alert. What's wrong with you people? Sorry, watch things, read things. But when like they choose to stay together and do, what is it? Do taxes and laundry for the rest of their life, but they're doing it together because they make each other happy.
Yeah. That's kind
of reminds me of that too. And that was a very absurd film.
It was. And I loved the I cried during his speech where he was like, you think that like me just like accepting things is a weakness. And I
love like, that man.
I was like,
I cried too. I was like, you remind me of my dad and how nice he is.
It was beautiful.
I gotta stop being mean.
I love that. Yeah. So I was in there rocking out, like just definitely thinking like, this is absurdism. This is like, and that's what it's like. It's realizing that these things are like, they are not ridiculous, but they conflict. Everything conflicts. Nothing makes sense. Yeah. And it's just like, oh, okay. Now what? You know, instead of going like, Exactly. Yeah, you see? Sam's adjacent to everything without realizing it most of the time.
I just consume a lot of content.
Yeah.
Okay, I like this. I like the way this is going. Shall we take a quick break?
Sure.
Okay. Well, if you believe that this show has meaning, I hope that you do. I don't know. Take this for what it is. But as some of you may have heard, this season is the last season of Inner Ho Uprising. But we want you to turn that frown upside down in the event that you're frowning. And buckle up, because from now until the end of November, you're in store for The Last Dance. This is a part of it. This is the final hoorah. Rodeca is giving her swan song for the Inner Ho Uprising right now. This is some shit that she's been holding on to, and she's busting it out.
I'm here just
right,
saying it
after
to y'all.
Several seasons, right? Mm-hmm. This is our farewell appearance. This is our famous last words. This is the cum-a-nation. That's a pun on culmination. And it's going really good. If you have special memories or moments of Inner Ho Uprising that you'd like to share with us, please drop us a line. It'll make us feel all warm and fuzzy inside, and we'll give you the very special opportunity of playing them on our final episode. So you're going to be on an episode of Inner Ho Uprising. You're going to be on the last episode of Inner Ho Uprising. That's nothing to sneeze at. To share your thoughts, please leave a voicemail at 404-491-9158. I'm going to give you like 5 seconds to pull out a piece of paper or your notes app or maybe even your phone app to write down that number. So that number is 404-491-9158. And it will also be in the show notes. Thank you for rocking with us for 10 seasons. Now let's get back to the show. All right. Philosophy. Nope.
Yes.
But yeah, that. Yeah.
So to double back, like I basically needed something. Like, I was looking for something to latch onto after I no longer felt like there was, like, a meaning to things after my car accident. So, in the article, it was funny that I ended up kind of exploring exactly what they talk about with the article, which is, like, when you accept that life has no intrinsic meanings, there's, like, 3 main ways to react. This is, like, philosophers say this. I don't know. He didn't say specifically which one, but I have seen it, especially with Camus. He does say that, like, he talks about suicide a lot. And there's like 3 normal reactions to it. The first one is philosophical suicide. So it's such as completely embracing a religion or a spirituality framework because one believes it's too hard, sad, or difficult to live on without one. I tried, it's funny because I didn't know these things, but then I looked and I was like, oh, check. I tried reading and identifying with Buddhism because for me, I always feel like if I pick something or if I look at something, it should be based on like something that I could touch. And I'm not a Buddhist. And this is only based off of like the couple of Google searches that I did. And when I was trying to read certain manuscripts and all that type of stuff, this is just like raw memory. But it was, I identify with it and I felt like I could follow along with it because it's about letting go of like these worldly things and kind of just accepting it. And your release, your ultimate release is nirvana, which is just like nothingness because you've just kind of reached this level of like, I don't need anything and I'm good. So I felt like there would be a lot of peace in learning to live without or learning to not attribute meaning to anything. And I was like, well, if they're all doing it, I respect Buddhists. And I think about like people lighting themselves on fire and just kind of like digging through it. I was like, wow, I could be like a whole system out here and just really be peaceful. But it didn't work. I just don't think I'm a religious person. So like I definitely respect the religion, but it wasn't something that I felt like I could practice all the time. But he goes on to say that adopting a religion or some sort of nebulous spirituality as someone who has accepted the truth of intrinsic meaningless amounts to either intellectual laziness, emotional weakness, or some combination thereof. It is to say that the truth is too difficult to consume and accept, and that you've chosen to believe something untrue because it is easier. Now, I don't think that, but sometimes I have my moments where I'm just like, I wish I was religious or I wish I had something because I feel like it would be easier, quote unquote, in a sense, because I'd have something other than myself or higher than myself to believe in. And I wanted to talk a little bit about like the perspectives of religion from each philosophy. So nihilists believe, not just that religion is false, i.e. that there is no built-in meaning in the universe waiting to be discovered, but that any meaning we try to build for ourselves will not be real either. It'll just be a construct of our own minds that we pretend has a gravity of religious meanings. For existentialists, they may or may not agree that religions speak to real or discoverable meaning, but they believe that people can make their own meaning that wouldn't be any less real than what religion offers. And absurdism is kind of like the unifier. It accepts that we seem to function best with some sort of religion belief in our life, but that science has shown that nihilists are right about both revealed meaning and constructed meaning. As a result, many choose to use some parts of a meaning structure, either borrowed or constructed, to get human benefits thereof, but without relaxing so far that they believe it's true. So for me, I just feel like absurdism always toys the balance of like, okay, there's this truth and there's this truth. Mm-hmm. And if you don't go too far into either one, you're having a good time. So for me, okay, it's just like, it would be remiss for me to say that like I have no morality system. I have no like things that religious people believe in, which is just like, do good unto others. Like that's kind of a basic thing that, mm-hmm, you know, a nihilist might, like somebody who tries to use nihilism for whatever reason they do, and most of the time in a negative way, might be, mm-hmm, like, well, there's no meaning, so we should like do this. And I'm like, you've already gone too far. Like I keep, mm-hmm, saying, like, do not, if you go far and you go to the left of like bad or good, you're already, mm-hmm, going against what nihilism is, which is just nothing. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's absurdism. I felt like it was like a good answer to just knowing what I've always like been told since I was younger, which, mm-hmm, is just like do good unto others, all these religious things. My mother's a very, very, very religious woman. So there's, mm-hmm, so much about like what I've grown up to hear and accept that I just don't want to get rid of, because I don't think, mm-hmm, that religion is necessarily something that just needs to be condemned. But at the same time, because it wasn't everything that I believed in, I felt kind of lost because I threw the whole book away. So I feel, mm-hmm, like absurdism kind of like acknowledges the fact that we all have some type of spiritual or religious influence, even just living in America. I like the fact that it was always keeping that in mind. Mm-hmm. So that was the first choice. It was either finding out the intrinsic meaning and you do philosophical suicide, which is just kind of like diving deep into something, but you don't have to do that with absurdism or with any philosophical belief. But I felt like, mm-hmm, absurdism kind of really honed in the fact that you don't have to go that far. Mm-hmm. And then there's physical suicide. This is where I was going to say we could do a trigger warning, because I am going to talk about suicide. But then, mm-hmm, also like my own thing, which is like due to life being ultimately meaningless and therefore either too boring or painful to continue. I have, mm-hmm, a complicated history with suicide. Mm-hmm. I've attempted it. I've contemplated it. I've had time where I was like idolizing it, because I was just like, yo, these are the brave ones. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm, for me, my fear of death has prevented me from going through with it as a person. And like the time that I did attempt it before I like threw up the pills or whatever, and like I was saving the pills and I decided not to do it another time. So there's definitely been like suicide has always been there, like kind of looming behind me. So it was kind, mm-hmm, of interesting that was one of the things that people kind of go through and seems like a normal thing that people contemplate when you feel like life is meaningless. Mm-hmm. But he comments in the article, to commit suicide is to turn one back on the beauty that life has to offer, which I feel like should only be explored in extreme cases. I put that in there. Sometimes it's not extreme cases. Sometimes it's just like, yeah. But I felt like the beauty of life has to offer did kind of stir something in me where I was just like, I do tend to forget when I get deep into like my thoughts about it. I do tend to forget the positive moments. And that's, mm-hmm, easy to forget. So, mm-hmm, I don't know. I kept that in there. I was like, maybe somebody needs to hear that part. Because it did kind of make me think. But I see you like making a face. Did you want to say something about that?
I actually just didn't understand what the second half of that sentence meant. Was he just like, yo, this is wild. Don't be doing that because life is beautiful. Unless shit is really fucked up. Like,
yeah, that is kind of what he's saying. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I will say that is a... Meisler's words, and we are not advocating suicide on the show. Yeah,
not at all. Yeah. But I felt like the first part was like something that I wanted to, mm-hmm, resonate on. Yeah. And then there's acceptance. So your third choice, acceptance, is great, which is continuing on despite knowing that the ultimate meaning is not possible. He says, I believe acceptance is the best way, and the best philosophy to adopt in acceptance is absurdism. So he was kind of like in line with me. So I was like, I'm going to talk about this article from that perspective. and Camus thought that life was absurd, but that knowing that was the beginning and not an end. By realizing it is all absurd, you have the opportunity to rebel against the meaninglessness, which is like in just he talks about in the first thing that he talks about in the Myth of Sisyphus is it's a lot about suicide. And it's just like, this is the problem with it, where it's like, if you do that, you're making life meaningless, almost in a sense, because of the fact that there's no one to contemplate the meaning of life, and therefore life becomes nothing. So in doing that, you're no longer being an absurdist. You're no longer doing what life is meant to be, which is to be lived and to contemplate and to question. And it requires a rebellion, even though it may be easy, not easy. Oh God, that's not the word I want to use. Even though that might be feel like the only choice that you have, there's another choice, which is just like doing it. And that's the real act of rebellion. And I don't know, something about being a rebel always felt like really fun for me. So I was like, for there to be a whole like school of thought about rebelling against what feels like the definitive thing to do, especially for someone like me who like was contemplating, has contemplated, and often contemplates suicide. It was like, by doing this, I'm being strong. And it felt like it was giving me something to live for.
Yeah.
So I wanted to, this is when I was going to talk about my friend at the time who was obsessed with nihilism. It was just like using it as like bitches and niggas and you know, everyone sucks because, and it's just such an excuse on Reddit, especially like on forums in general, 4chan, all that type of shit, that talk about like being a dick or being heartless or just like really, like literally school shooting. So I'm glad that you said that because it's just like, or I think nihilism has ties to even German, Nazi Germany and all that type of stuff. And the Nietzsche was the first person to be like, nah, that's not what I was saying. Like he straight up was like, no, 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 you guys are going way too far with that. I was like, I'm totally not a for
you're
that.
Using my shit for the wrong reasons.
You're using it for the straight up wrong reasons. And I think there was a time that I had seen like a crossover between Buddhism and nihilism. So it kind of like made me feel like, okay, there's something to be talked about that isn't just something negative. It could be used as a way to let go as opposed to like using it as a reason to aim for people. So during a particularly bad, I kind of talked about how I led from nihilism to existentialism. It was during a particularly bad depressive episode that I went into Reddit and I followed a whole bunch of different philosophical subreddits, anything to relate it to life not having meaning, but let's try anyway. And I unknowingly actually followed absurdism on Reddit and saw a meme, a meme about Sisyphus. And they kept talking about Sisyphus. And I was like, I know Greek mythology. I used to be obsessed with Greek mythology when I was a kid. Like, why are you guys talking about this punishment that this guy had? So Camus compares the absurdity of man's life with the situation of Sisyphus, a figure in Greek mythology who was condemned to repeat the forever repeat the same meaningless task of pushing a boulder up a mountain, only to see it roll down again. The story resonated with me because of Greek mythology, but because I always thought of a punishment, I was like so intrigued as to why he kept mentioning it. So the end of the book that is kind of like the absurdism doctrine, he talks, he says, the struggle itself is enough to fill a man's heart. One must imagine Sisyphus happy. And that like kind of made me think. I think I have the longer quote here. Hold on one second. I'm like, do not. That's fine. Either way.
That's fine.
It was literally the line of one must imagine Sisyphus happy. And like putting a smile on someone who like is pushing the same task over and over again made me, it reframed everything for me where I was like, maybe it doesn't have to be terrible. Maybe it doesn't have to be something where I have to frown about it. And instead smiling about it and thinking like, wow, I could do this, or I can do the same thing over and over again and find something new in the day, or find like a fresh flower or some shit like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's where absurdism kind of like resonated with me the most.
Yeah.
And that's why I wanted to kind of talk about this, because I don't want the whole thing where anybody thinks about nihilism or philosophy or all of these things where like there's no intrinsic meaning, that it's like automatically school shooter or automatically like
incels, this is
like exactly. It's like it's freedom. It's literally the definition of doing things your way and finding the positivity or finding something that can keep you moving forward. And I think that there's a culture around it where it says that you should be callous to people, or you feel like you should be callous to people, but it could actually lead to a greater sense of love amongst one another because we're all in it together at the same time doing the same exact thing. Like, none of us actually be here.
Yeah, 7 billion people with meaningless lives. We can make some meaning. We can make something shake with that. It's a lot of people.
And there's an intrinsic commonality with everyone that you meet. We're all born and we're all kind of just on this conveyor belt. So it's like, have these conversations that I was afraid to have, that, you know, you can have so many different backgrounds. You can come from a whole bunch of different things, but we all kind of, what is it? The only thing that's certain in life is life, death, and taxes. So mm-hmm. having those conversations is like, we all kind of have those basic three things that we can lean on. Mm-hmm. And I think at one point in time I had talked about, because I think in the beginning you framed it as, how does it go with sex, love, and dating? Mm-hmm. I couldn't find a way to do it, but then I realized that, like, I just talk about how I feel. And that mm-hmm. was, at one point in time, I had lost my libido. I had lost, like, my, well, clearly I'd lost, like, my will to live. So sex was, like, down
bottom
there.
Of the list at that point. Yeah.
There was, it's interesting because I've had two different modes about it. I had a time where I felt hypersexual because, like, I would be in the middle of an existential crisis and talk to my partner at the time and say, I need to have sex right now so I don't have to think about anything. Mm. And, like, they were, like, I was honest with them and it was something where I was able to use it. But then it got to the point that my body wasn't responding in that way. So it was the exact opposite. It was like, how do I keep doing anything? How do I feel sexy? How do I feel any of those things when I feel nothing? Mm-hmm. Or nothing but terror. Mm-hmm. And it made me realize, with absurdism, with existentialism, with being more optimistic about certain things, it did kind of create something where I was like, well, I can have sex because I can have sex because I got a puss and there's no reason why I shouldn't do it if I want to. It's mm-hmm. still, like, complicated. It's still something that, like, I'm trying to figure out now to get back to. I don't even know back to a new mm-hmm. future where it is something that's renewed excitement. But I mm-hmm. just feel like there's a renewed sense of everything with just, like, feeling like I can create my own meaning and feeling like I can do my own thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Should I read these quotes? They feel kind of empty now. I don't know why, but
whatever you want. If they feel empty, then no. But
I don't know. I think I'm going to end with the quote that I had at the end, which I felt like kind of encapsulates the freedom that I wanted to talk about. And it's a quote by Camus, and then I want to hear what you have to say first, and then I'll say
what. Okay. About what specifically do you want my take on?
I feel like, did anything make you think, I was gonna say, did anything make you think about anything? No. If this episode resonated with you, Sam, just because at the beginning you had no, like, well, you felt like you had no, like, prior experience with it. And do you feel like this is something that somebody might need to hear, or something that, like, you know, you leave and you're like, maybe I will smile a little bit at this boulder that I'm pushing up, as opposed to, like, frowning about it?
Yeah, I definitely think that this is something that folks could use hearing, for sure, because we don't, like, as you framed in the beginning of the episode, we don't really, like, I remember I used to have thoughts about, like, I'm gonna die one day when I was like 12 or something like that. Like, yeah. I remember this one instance where our family computer was off and I looked life is so weird and silly. I looked in the computer at my reflection in this old ass fucking, like, Windows 95, and I was like, oh shit, I exist. Yo. I got freaked out. Like, I've always been, like, a night owl, so, like, nobody was up and I was, like, finishing up some homework or some shit like that. I was like, I fucking exist. But, like, I couldn't, like, wake up. I could have, but I didn't think that it would be okay for me to, like, wake up my parents and be like, yo, we gotta talk about this.
Yeah.
What's going on? And then, like, it's like everybody has it, but nobody talks about it. Like, I remember it was, like, really beautiful satellite pictures or telescope pictures that we got a couple of weeks ago of, like, space and shit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, not Jupiter, but, like, it was, like, the whole universe or something like that. Like, one side of the universe.
No, I haven't seen that.
And it was, like, every dot is a fucking galaxy. And it was, like, mad dots. And I remember showing it to my dad, and he was, like, he's religious, too. Like, he's a Christian. But he's even, like, been, like, you know, like, well, that just proves that there's something out there. Like, nobody knows for sure or whatever. We all think about these things. And he, like, was like, no, I can't look at that. That just makes me think too hard. Like, how did it all get started? I can't like do that thought process. So it's like even the people you don't expect to like have these thoughts have these thoughts. So I think that this is a great, it's kind of like a salve kind of thing, because it like shows we're not all alone. And then also, I know that these things aren't instructive, but it gives you kind of a way to process your thoughts about all of this stuff. Yeah. And in terms of like all of the things that you laid out, I think it was cool hearing that. Like, I feel like incels kind of bastardized nihilism a little bit. Like, I have beef a little bit. Like, this wasn't something that needed to happen. Like, it doesn't have to be like this serial killer, kill yourself, kill other people, be an asshole to like animals and women kind of approach to it. So I feel like you did a good job of kind of like reclaiming that word back. Yeah. And I don't know. I can't say, because it's like this show, like whenever somebody says something, I'm like, oh, am I that? But I do feel like, oh, okay. Like a lot of the things that absurdism offers, I think that I already practice in my day-to-day life. Like one of my favorite joys is like going out and like picking a flower and shit like that. And I'm just like, I'm living life right now. It's like the most simplest thing. But like,
that's beautiful though. That's
having
awesome.
A moment in the workday to go out and pick a flower and like putting it in a little fucking like thing of water is like, that's joy.
That's joy. So. I saw a TikTok that like a guy just put his hand in the creek with like a cup, and he's like, simple joys that people take for granted. And he just ran it over like a rock and it changed color. And I was like, wait a minute. That was beautiful. Nice. Yeah. You know what I mean? I was like, I was imagining the feeling of like the cool river. And I was like, this is just like a good thing that like I forgot to find the beauty in. And the things that I'm trying to take back. So I moved to another state so I can get some rivers and lakes, and there's like a creek, and I wanted to be in touch with the one thing that I never had to really question. And that was like, when I'm out in nature, I feel this sense of like belonging, or this sense of calm that I just wanted more of, in search of like making sure that my life can not have an intrinsic meaning, but a meaning that I create, you know?
Yeah.
And just taking charge of that. So yeah. And I guess a call to action to anybody listening is like, one, you can have these conversations with people, and we probably should be having these conversations with people because I know in a lot of other cultures, death is not something that we're not talking about. It's something that's like on the dinner table. It's something that's celebrated sometimes. It's something that like, you know, we're having these conversations. I don't know if it's like my culture. I don't know if it's like American culture. I don't know if it's just like something where we push it to the side and then it builds this fear. Mm-hmm. And especially for someone like me who's agnostic or just like isn't religious, it's like I can't talk to my family about it because they're just like, we'll pray. And I'm like, okay.
Thanks, man.
I think Hannibal Buress has this joke where he's like, oh, thanks for saying you're gonna pray for me. You're just gonna sit in your room and do nothing. That's what you're gonna do. Well,
yeah.
But that's a joke. But you know, like affirmations and lots of stuff is very important. So for me, it's just like having this not necessarily meaning, but like a direction and a conversation with people who might be feeling the same thing. You talk to us about it too and send them some things that you guys do, flowers that you pick, things that like your small moments of smiling while you're pushing the boulder would be awesome to hear, because community is important. So that's why I'm having this conversation for the first time in my life in public, as opposed to just like feeling like it's something that I have to hide. And yes, I'm taking nihilism back from y'all, because y'all are just using that as an excuse to do whatever the fuck you want to do. You're not even thinking about the fact that like literally if you should be sitting still. That's the most nihilist thing that you can do, man. It's just like nothing, absolutely nothing. So the actions that you're taking, that's all you, bro. But I wanted to end with a quote by Camus, and it's about freedom of choice. Man sees freedom in a new light. Freedom is no longer seen as a coming from God or a transcendent being or idea, nor is it freedom to work towards some future goal. Rather, freedom is now seen as founded on the certainty of death and the absurd, with the realization that man has only this present life as a certainty, or with the further realization that no transcendent beyond this life is admissible, comes the freedom and release to live the present fully. This does not negate consideration for the future, but it does not allow the future to rob the man of his present. Could have made that a little neater, but y'all heard me anyway. But yeah, it's just like, live the moment now, and you have the freedom, and you don't have to think about the future taking anything from you, because what the fuck is the future anyway? You know, it's just now. So
yeah. I dig that. I like that. I feel good.
Right.
An ironic thing is that my timer to take my laundry out of the washing machine and put it in the dryer rang like 2 seconds ago. So
is that what you said, like talking about laundry before?
Because no, we had just been talking about laundry and now I have to do my fucking laundry. So it's all that. I think that was great. Do you have anything else to say?
Nah, you know. Yeah. I'm glad I got through that. I was scared before. I was telling Sam we were like planning it. I was scared that I was going to get through it and be like, and have an existential crisis at the end of it.
Yeah.
But like, I'm smiling and I feel good, which means like I've changed as a person and I've like developed and actually done things. So therapy.
That's good.
So I feel
That's good. That's good. Yeah. I'm happy. I'm glad to see it. Yeah. At one point I was like, damn, am I going to go back to when I was like 18 on the train? But I feel good too. So
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah. That's good.
We hope you listeners,
and I hope you guys feel good too.
Yeah. Jinx. Yeah. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, if this podcast has ever made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a voicemail for our series finale. If you have special memories or moments of Inner Hoa Uprising that you'd like to share with us, please drop us a line. It'll make us feel really, really good to play them on our final episode. To share your thoughts, leave a voicemail to 404-491-9158. 404-491-9158. That number is in the show notes. And yeah, have a lovely week, because you motherfucking deserve to.
Bye.
Bye.